Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
British Natalie Shea is a critically acclaimed multi-award winning musician and songwriter, known for her explosive live performances and vibrant infectious anthems. A Brit school graduate, the North London artist writes relatable lyrics touching on love, friendships, self-discovery and the everyday experiences of a 20-something. Having received praise from notable publications such as Billboard, Clash, Notion, Wonderland, and the line of Best Fit, to name a few, Natalie is on everyone's radar. She has received strong support from BBC Radio 1's Future Pop Show, landed on Spotify's New Music Friday playlist in 12 countries, and has also featured on dance tracks to the likes of Grum, Giuseppe Ottaviani, and Kreider, racking up over 10 million streams to date. Natalie is one of the UK's hottest emerging talents, and has sold out prestigious London venue Omira and showcased at SXSW in Austin, Texas, as well as being booked for major UK festivals such as Reading, Latitude, Victorious, Why Not, BST in Hyde Park, and Ocean Fest. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Natalie Shea. Where do we find you in the world and how are you doing?
I am in London, England, and I'm doing well. It's a sunny day today. It's not been very sunny this week, but we're getting there. It's getting there.
Okay, let's rewind. At what age did you think, cool, you want to be in the music or entertainment world, creative world? And how did that journey progress to where we are currently?
So I started playing classical guitar when I was about 5. And around the same time, I started doing musical theatre. So I was always singing and playing guitar, but never together until I was 11 when I saw Taylor Swift in concert. And I saw her writing songs and playing guitar and singing at the same time. And I was like, I want to do that. That's really cool. So I started giving that a go when I was 11 or 12. And then when I was 13, I started playing shows around London, my own songs and gigging and posting things online. And I've kind of just been doing it ever since.
How old are you now?
I'm now 25.
Okay, so it's been a good solid 12 years or so.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. From 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song. Is it easy every time? What motivates it? What invigorates it? Let's unpack your creative brain.
Yes, so I try not to write unless I have something I want to say. I do sometimes, but I feel like you have to force it a little bit then. I'm more a lyrics person than I am a melody person, so I think I like my lyrics to have some sort of substance and meaning and actually mean something. So for me, I don't tend to write songs unless something's happened to me or to somebody close to me or something that I want to write about or say. And then when something does happen, I write a lot of songs. So for me, I need an idea to start me off. And then usually the melody follows afterwards once I have the premise of what I actually want to say in the song.
And do you write songs by yourself or do you collaborate with other people?
I kind of write songs in two ways. I either write on my own with my guitar, which is what I've always done since I first started in my room, just on guitar. But now that I do more music, you get put in writing sessions with other writers and producers a lot. So I get put in rooms with people often. And so, yeah, I either write songs kind of in a room with one or two other people or on my own. That's kind of the only two ways that I write a song.
Is that something that you had to get used to, writing songs with others? Because for the longest time, you were writing songs by yourself.
Yeah, I was reluctant to do it for a long time because I was like, oh no, like they're my songs. But then I realised actually, no, collaboration is the key to expanding and development. You do need to collaborate. But it is a skill. It's a skill. I think a lot of it comes from being confident enough to tell the people in the room what ideas you're thinking, because it can be a little bit embarrassing, like to say out loud like what you're thinking, and you can be a bit shy. And once you do a lot of them and get over that shyness and get confident in what you're thinking in your head and ready to share with the room, I think that's when it all comes together. But for me, it was more like just being a bit shy to tell people like what I thought.
What is next? What's happening short term and long term?
In the short term, I just released my EP and then I have my EP release show in London that's sold out. So that should be fun. Then over the summer, I'm playing lots of festivals, hopefully some new music in September, and then I go to Nashville in October. So this is the, how my year is going to be panning out. And the long term, I don't really know. I obviously want to do an album. I've not done one because I'm just waiting for some funding or something. Because like, I could do it, but I want it to be good. I want it to be worth it. And so I don't think I'm at the right sort of position. I think I'm still rising, so I don't think I'm at the right place to start with the album yet. But when I'm ready, I've got songs. Like, it's not a problem about the songs. It's just kind of the sort of logistical side of when I do an album. Hopefully, just keep doing this until I don't, until I can't anymore. That's the plan.
So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding something, the journey of the choice, the journey of the unpacking, the booklet, the listening from song 1 to 10 or 15. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and vinyls are making a massive comeback. Vinyls alone last year in the UK, 5.9 million copies sold, the biggest since 1990. And cassettes and CDs are also on an upward trajectory. But we've also got these streaming platforms whereby people consume music on. What is your observation and perception of the landscape at the moment?
So when I first started releasing, streaming wasn't really a thing. It was all about buying songs on iTunes. So for the first sort of 3 years of my career, it was about buying and iTunes charts and selling songs. So I've kind of seen on the tail end of that and into streaming. So I feel like I've sort of been releasing through both periods of time. I think streaming is great because it means that lots of different people can discover your music and is more accessible. And it means that people that perhaps weren't ready to like invest into your brand can listen to your music and stuff. So I think it's good for that reason. But I do think that these streaming platforms, they're very label based, and even like all the playlists are sort of connected to people and who says what should go where and who's decided what goes where. And I think that makes it kind of a bit unfair, and it means a lot of stuff gets lost. And so, yeah, there's parts of it I don't really like the workings of. I think there's like, yeah, but I do get it. And at the same time, it's kind of like, I think streaming is great. It means loads of people can listen to music and get into music that perhaps don't have very much money or wouldn't have got into music otherwise. So it's good and bad.
And what do you enjoy about performing live?
Performing live is my favourite part of all of it. I love performing live. That's my favourite thing. I write songs to play them live. I don't really write to record. I write to play live. I like connecting because I'm a musical theatre kid. I think in theatre you tell a story, you act a story, you try and connect with an audience, get them to feel some kind of emotion. So that's my favourite thing. I like to look out and look at the people that I'm singing to, and hopefully like somebody's connected to the lyrics. Just the sort of just the weirdness of the connection of being on a stage, and it's weird, but I like it, but it's really weird.
So I'm that guy that's normally standing up right in front, dancing, jamming, doing my thing. I'll take my phone out and take a couple of videos, a couple of photos, and I'll put it away. I notice that the people around me, they oftentimes 70-80% 90% of the time videoing, posting, tweeting, photoing. From your perspective, being on the stage and seeing a bunch of phones, do you feel that takes away from the energy of the interaction with the audience and from them being in the moment, or it's just where society is at this stage?
Well, if I'm playing to an audience that don't already know me, I kind of take people that's taking out their phones to film as like a stamp of approval. So I quite like it in those scenarios. I'm like, okay, so they liked it enough to get the phone out to film it. They're going to watch that back. They're going to post that. That means that I've sold that person, they like the project. So sometimes it can be nice, but yeah, I think people that are sort of just like texting at a gig, I find that strange. I don't know, I get it. My attention span is short too, but you know, like maybe not the best place to be on your phone.
What's the difference for you performing at festivals compared to performing at your own headlining show?
I like my own shows more because everybody comes for you, and it's like, it's a different kind of energy. I've got a big one tomorrow, so everyone there will be there for me. They'll presumably know the words to the songs, and it will be, I don't have to win people over. I get to just sort of enjoy the show. But I think when at festivals, there's a lot of winning people over. Obviously, lots of people come to the stage to watch you, but there's also a lot of people that perhaps haven't seen you before, or perhaps only know one song. And it's a lot of winning people over and sort of getting people to buy into it. So I feel like there's a lot of pressure on a festival slot, I think, to impress, whereas in my own shows it's more of a sort of enjoyable thing, I think.
But also then at festivals you can win over all these new people so they can become fans and come to your own show.
Yes, that's the plan. I hope so.
So we're going to be filling out stadiums soon. Let's put it out there. I'm just saying, let's do it.
Yes, we will.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 years, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. But if you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
A song called Dramamine by a band called Middle Kids. I really like that song at the moment. I think it's really good. I've also been listening to So High School by Taylor Swift. It's one of her new ones. I've not connected to a Taylor Swift song like this one in a long time. Like I love a massive Taylor Swift fan, but this is like out of her new stuff. This one's really got in there into my head. What else am I listening to? Ooh, one of my favorite songs of all time is Forever by Haim. I love that song. That's one of my favorite songs. I always go back to that song. There's also a really obscure song called The Blur, The Line and the Thickest of Onions by a band called Little Comets. It's like a political song about the state of the country and politics, and I think lyrically that's really strong, that song. I like that one. And my last choice would probably be Love Me by the 1975, or anything by the 1975. I just like the vibe.
Cool, a nice mix. I like it. Now, you referenced this earlier, so I'm going to dive straight in. I'm not sure if you're aware of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. So that's the way people receive and interpret information. There's a section around processing information, and people have a dominant one, a secondary, and a tertiary one. Now, dominance means that you'll be in it for most of the day, secondary for a little bit of the day, and tertiary, maybe half an hour, if at all. Now, there are three skills, namely visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. Now, visual people create pictures around what they're receiving or the information they're getting. Auditory people, it's around the words and sentences. So they understand the word, they put it into a sentence, they understand the sentence, put it into a paragraph. Kinesthetic, again, that word kinesthetic, they interpret information through the body language, their energy, the tone of voice, all those sort of elements around the information. Now, focusing specifically on music, when you're listening to music of your own or by other artists, when you're listening to the song or songs, are you creating pictures when listening to them? Is it about hearing the words, or is it about the energy, feeling, and emotion that you're getting?
For me, it's words. I'm a lyrics person. Everything is words. Like a song could sound great, but if the lyrics are not good, then I just won't listen to it again. Like I really need the lyrics to impress me, and like I need to feel into the story or into the feeling. It's all about like it's lyrics and learning about the artist and learning about what the song is about, and then the rest of it kind of follows. Like even if the vibe's lovely, it's cool, but the lyrics need to fit for the vibe, for me to feel the vibe. I need to hear the lyrics.
And you don't need to consciously focus on those words in order to hear them. You can hear them easily, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Do you know how many millions of people who listen to music and do not know what the words or hear the lyrics in order to hear what they are? I find it completely bizarre. And they're listening to these songs without any awareness of what they are about.
Well, there's people that I played, like my guitarist, Joey. He's like the best guitarist ever, but he doesn't know the words to any of my songs, and he's been playing them for years and years and years. And I'm always like, why don't you know the words? He's like, oh, I don't really listen to the words. I just listen to the melody.
Here we go. Okay, so when you're listening to songs by other artists, are you able to just relax and enjoy for what it is? Or is your technical creative brain unpacking what you're listening to?
I think I've ruined music for myself now. Same with shows. I can't watch a show without looking at what they're doing. And I can't listen to music without trying to go like, how do I make this? How do they do that? Like, how is this what's in now? Like, I'm very sort of, everything's a business mind, my attitude to everything now. This is why I'm really into musical theatre, I think, because I really like music. But when I listen to musical theatre, I'm not thinking in that way, because it's not directly linked to what I'm doing. So I'm not listening to it trying to like compare or learn from it. I'm just enjoying it. So that's why I really like musicals. I listen to a lot of theatre. But yeah, I can't really listen to music or go to shows now without analysing it and stuff. Yeah.
Any thoughts about going back into theatre and performing?
Yeah, I do a little bit of it. I've not really let it die. I love doing it. I would like to do more of it eventually, but I think when you're doing something like music, it kind of takes up all of your time. And if you don't give it everything, like you just have to give it everything. It's about sacrifice, about like momentum and realizing you get one shot to give it all and like to keep going. So I am doing that, but I think like there'll always be a space for the theatre. Like that's something that I don't think is so age specific, especially for women. Like just be an actress when I'm 40, like, but maybe I can't do the pop music thing. Like, so
Well, I
I
mean, Kylie's still doing it and she's 55, so I'm just saying.
it's true, but she did start young and she gave it all when she was young. So I feel
Exactly.
like you got to give it your all now if you want to set yourself up to continue for a long time. You got to, when you're starting out, give it everything. So I'm doing that at the moment.
Well, theatre is so much work, energy, time, and rehearsal that there won't be time for music as well.
Yes, and it's a whole other sacrifice. Like, if you're doing theatre, you give it everything. You have to give that your life. So I can't do two massive things at once.
So, bucket list of a list of three theatre performances that you have yet to perform in that you'd love to do so.
Oh, that's so good. I'd love to be in Hairspray. That's my favorite musical of all time. I'd like to play Velma at some point because she's got like a nice song that I that suits my voice really well. So I'd like to
Which
do
song is
that
that?
part.
Which song is that?
Miss Baltimore Crabs. I just think it
Oh,
whenever I sing it. I
yeah.
like singing it. It's really fun to sing. I also would like to be Nancy and Oliver at some point. I did it once when I was like 19, but I'd like to do it properly. And my favorite show of all time is The Last 5 Years. So I'd like to maybe be Kathy one day.
Oh, I haven't heard of that show. It sounds interesting.
Oh, it's brilliant. If you like lyrics and songwriting and relationships, that's the one for you.
But do they talk and sing or just sing?
The whole show is sung with a bit of talking, but it's kind of modern, and it's only two people, and it's about their relationship over 5 years. She wants to be a performer and he wants to be a writer. His career takes off and hers doesn't, and it's about like how she can't really support him because the jealousy of the success, and how he's like gets too big for his boots, and it like the like, so if you're a creative or an artist, like, I'm sure you've been through that. Like, it's so relatable. But yeah,
And now tell us about your perception of social media.
good and bad. It's without it, I wouldn't have done anything that I've done. Like, I need it for what I do. I really need it, and I do enjoy it. I enjoy getting my posts together. I enjoy designing my Instagram and choosing photos and making a brand and being in control of like how I'm perceived. I really enjoy that. But I think it's actually easier to be a creator on social media than a user. I think if you're a user, that's when most of the toxicity comes in. I think if I didn't have the platform, it would be harder. I think because I have this platform and I can just post whatever and there's always people there, it's fine. But I think if I was just like an average user, I think that's when like the comparison and the sort of the way, like all the sort of the highlight reel stuff, like will get to you, bring you down, make you feel like your life isn't good, even though it is. It's just the people that do what I do are posting all these things, and I think it's much harder as a user. And I do worry. I worry about opinions, and I worry about people learning, like getting told the wrong opinions and getting told like damaging opinions from people that perhaps would rather give people bad advice because they're not achieving than give them good advice. And I think a lot of people on social media are people that haven't got where they want to get, so they give bad advice to sort of to keep people back. When I think it should be more encouraging. There's not enough encouragement. It's all moaning and complaining and like stuff that I just don't like. Like, I don't like negative complaining or like people are bad or cutting people out or like judgment. Like, I'm not about that. I'm more about just like, if you've got something you want to do, let's do it because it's fun and life's short. Like, I'm more about that.
Exactly. So instead of wasting that energy on negativity, be creative. You mentioned that you're creating a brand from your persona on social media. So when you meet fans in real life who perceive they know you from seeing you on social media and you don't know them, how do you balance that interaction?
It's weird because it's like you meet people, they know lots of things about you, and I don't really know them. Or I might like know their name from commenting, but I don't, and they assume I know them because I know their name when I've replied to
Exactly.
them, but I don't really. I've never looked at their Instagram, I just replied to them a few times. It's weird, but I think, I don't know, it's a strange one. It's a strange one. I don't think I've totally mastered it yet, to be fair. I've not really had enough of it, I don't think, to have got good at it, but I'm getting to a point now where I'm learning how to sort of. Just because somebody knows me and is very friendly with me doesn't make them my friend. And I'm learning how to not just sort of be like, oh, we know each other from the internet, we're friends, because it's like, in this scenario, we're not friends. In this scenario, there's like a imbalance here. And like, perhaps we could be friends, but right now, like, there's an imbalance. So I need to remember, like, to not just sort of open up to random people all the time. I'm getting there. I'm getting better at it. I am.
It's about finding that balance because they're coming at you with full energy. You want to return with that, but you're not sure or aware of what their intentions are. So it's about protecting yourself and putting boundaries up.
Very true. Exactly. I've had a few recently where I'm like, actually, I need to get a bit better at my fan control, I think,
Yes,
and not.
yes.
Yes.
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message, what would you like to say?
I would like to say, please check out my music. My name's Natalie Shay, and I'd like to say, if you're someone with a dream or a passion, just give it a go. Like, it doesn't have to be your job. Doesn't you don't even really have to show anyone. But if it's something you want to do, just do it, because I think the happiest people are the people that are just doing the things they like doing, whatever it is. Just do them. Make it happen.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.